from the University of Sheffield. And he is also obviously a nurse, and he nursed at St George's Hospital in London. His primary work is working with the care of older people, and he has a special interest in feeding and nutritional problems of older people with dementia. He is also the editor-in-chief in the Journal of Advanced Nursing and the editor of Nursing Open. A frequent visitor to the Far East, Southeast Asia and Australia, he has honorary and visiting positions in China, Hong Kong and Australia. He is a Professor of Nursing, University of Hull, UK, and was a member of the UK 2014 Research Excellence Framework subpanel for allied health professions in dentistry, nursing and pharmacy. So he comes with a whole plethora of qualifications. And today, Dr. Roger is going to talk about a strategic approach to publishing your research. So welcome, Professor Roger.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Nothing happening. Good morning. I'm just dealing with technical difficulties at the moment. I need to get the slides up and also to open them. Oh, thanks. Here's the man who's going to sort all the problems out. It's not opening up.
Thanks.
Okay, sorry about that. Say good morning. Thank you. You're very lucky to have me here, not because I'm anything special, but because I spent half an hour in the room next door waiting to be introduced, and I was in the wrong room, so I'm in the right place now. That always helps. On the bus on the way here this morning, and several times since I've been around the hall, I've been asked, have I been in Saudi before? And my answer to that is, well, not since a couple of weeks ago. I've been here three times in the last 6 weeks, which is great. I enjoy it very much. And I first came here in 1991 with the British Army during the first Gulf War. And we were stationed out at King Khalid International Airport. So that was a long time ago, but I've been coming off and on since then. I'm very pleased to do that. It says on the timetable I'm talking for 20 minutes. I've been asked to talk for a little bit longer, for 40 minutes. I think I'll probably manage about 30 or 35. Are we having questions at the end? Oh, yeah, at the end. Okay, well, we'll have collective questions at the end. Right. What I'm going to talk about is a strategic approach to publishing your research. Now, I don't know how many people here are interested in publishing. I hope at least some are. Really, all of you should be. I started publishing when I was a student nurse at St George's Hospital a long time ago. That is a long time ago, 1982-83. And I published as a staff nurse and then as a charge nurse and carried on in academic life. And I think it's not something just for academics, it's for clinical people as well. It shouldn't be seen as a special activity set aside only for those in universities, because it's a very satisfying thing to do, and it really is the only way that you're going to convince other people that what you do is any good, if not the best necessarily. I go to many conferences and hear people tell me about what they do, and tell me that their care is the best or whatever. But I think unless you're willing to publish that, put it out in the public domain and have other people read it and possibly criticise it, then you know, you're not really sharing your work properly. And these days the possibilities for publishing are endless. I'm going to talk about publishing in academic journals, which I suppose is seen as the pinnacle. I'm not sure how long that will be the pinnacle, but don't forget about other ways to publish your work. Twitter, blogging, YouTube, Facebook, all these things are important these days for publishing your work. And don't forget as well about professional articles, professional journals, which are specific to specific to professional areas. So I hope what I'm going to say has got some currency across all these different kinds of publications. So I just want to say, well, first of all, welcome from the University of Hull. It's very difficult for people to pronounce who don't come from Hull. H-U-L-L, Hull. You did fairly well there, whoever was introducing me, but I know it's difficult. In Hull, they say, oh, it's like a very strange accent. But sometimes the sun shines in Hull and sometimes it snows, and on this day both were happening at once. And that's the front gate of the university. My office is right behind that that wall. I hope that some of you will come and visit us there someday, either just to see me or come and do your master's degree or your PhD or whatever. We're certainly keen to do that. So, in terms of having a strategy towards publishing your research, if indeed you're interested in publishing your research, you know, you need to do three things. You need to think about what you're going to publish, you need to plan it out, and then you need to manage that strategy. Publishing doesn't just happen by accident, and it doesn't just happen it shouldn't just happen as a once-off thing. You know, once you've published something, once you've published a paper or an article or a blog or whatever you've published, the first thing that should be in your mind is, what's next? All the good academics that I work with, all the ones that I publish regularly with, as soon as we've published something, it's always very satisfying, but we don't sort of rest on our laurels. We think, right, what's coming out next? So I think publication should be seen as a medium to long-term strategy for getting your work out there. And as I say, it's the only way really that you're going to get people to read it. You can tell people about it. If I told people this group about my research today, I'd be telling what, maybe 1,000 people about it. If you publish something, you can reach thousands, if not millions of people with it. So it's a much more effective way. So I'm going to say something about the process of writing for publication, but what I want to get across is having a sort of actual strategy for doing that. Now, this is how most people see the publication process. That's supposed to be, that's not serious, by the way. This is how most people see it. This is you, or this doesn't work on these screens. The guy at the bottom left, that's you with your manuscript, trying to get it accepted by a journal up at the top right. So that's it. It's not, okay. So, This is how it seems when you're trying to get published. I don't know how many people in the room have tried to get published. I know one or two colleagues have. And it seems like on the way to getting published, all there are obstacles on the way. People who want to sort of swipe you. The chap on the right-hand side with the sword, that's me as the editor-in-chief of the journal. And the rest of the people there are the editors trying to stop you getting published. Now, that's what it seems like. But in fact, what people are trying to do in this process is try to help you to make your article better and to get it to the right standard for publication and get it to the highest possible quality. Now, if you're going to get into writing for publication, you've got to accept that not everything that you write will get accepted immediately. Sometimes it will be rejected. My own journal rejects nearly 80% of the papers that come into the journal. I reject something like a third of them right at the beginning of the process. My editors reject another third, and then another third or so are rejected during the review process. It's not the same for all journals. Some journals have higher rejection rates, some have lower. But you've got to get into a mindset that you're not just going to get your paper published straight away necessarily. You may have to revise it, you may have to think again and take it somewhere else. But if you've got a strategic approach to it, you will eventually get everything that you write published. You should never give up. If you've written something, you thought it was good enough, you put some effort into it, you should be aiming ultimately to get it published somewhere. If you don't get it published in an academic journal, you might go for a professional journal. If you don't get it published there, you might try and whittle it down to being an editorial or a commentary. Ultimately, if you don't publish it there, you can put it out on a blog. Not all these things are equal, but I think you should be determined at some point, after you've given everything a good go, to get it out there. Don't waste what you've published or what you've written. And if you get things back for revision from a journal, don't say, throw your hands up in horror and say, well, that's it, I'm not going to try again. Don't give up. If you're asked to do revisions, do the revisions. Don't send them somewhere else. If you're asked to do revisions, the door's wide open. It means the reviewers and the editors like what you've done. They'll give you very specific points to consider for review, which I'll talk about at the end of the presentation. You should do them. You should always do them. Don't bury things away. Don't be discouraged. You've got to develop quite a thick skin if you're going to get into writing for publication. So what we all do when we sit down to write for publication is we never do it. We never get down to it straight away. Writing for publication isn't a natural activity. It takes you away from what you normally want to do, talking to your friends, watching TV, having a cup of coffee, or just lounging about doing nothing. And I think the beginnings of a strategic approach to publication are actually making some time to do it. You can talk about strategy and talk about all the different rules and regulations of publication. However, if you don't actually make time to do it and sit down to do it, then you won't get it done. You can edit a bad page of writing, but you can't edit a blank page of writing. So when we sit down to write, we tend to look out the window, make ourselves a cup of coffee, play about with everything on our desk, get on Twitter or Facebook and all these things, and we get a bit discouraged and we feel we're never going to get any writing done. My answer to these things is not to worry about them, not to make writing seem like hard work or a drudge. Do a little bit at a time. You know, just do a few hundred words every day or every time you sit down to write. Never sit down to write a whole article at once. For example, if you're writing for a professional journal, the article may be a couple of thousand words long. If you're writing for an academic journal, it's probably going to be about 5,000 words long. You will never write all that at once, because you'll run out of ideas, you'll run out of enthusiasm, you'll run out of energy, and you'll run out of the will to live. So what you should do is try and break it down into lots and lots of small tasks. So try and, again, be strategic about the way that you write. Think, well, I'm going to do a couple of hundred words today, I'm going to do a couple of hundred words before I go to work, or before I start my work shift, before I come home, I'm going to do a couple of hundred. I'm not going to have an hour for lunch today, I'm going to have 45 minutes, I'm going to write a little bit. And don't worry about being in the right place. This person's sitting in his office, but you can write anywhere. We've all got smartphones, tablets, portable computers. There's no excuse. You can write almost anywhere. You don't have to be in the right place. You don't have to be in the perfect place. You also don't have to be in the right mindset. A colleague of mine often says that the time to write is when you don't feel like writing, because that's the time when you often do your best writing. If you wait until you are ready to write or you feel like writing, well, those times rarely come, because we're all busy. And we all have wives and husbands and children who get on our nerves from time to time. We stub our toes on the way out and we've got a headache. We always use these things as excuses not to write. But I think we should just push through those and do a small piece of writing as often as we can. Okay. So what you need to do if you're going to get into writing for publication is to Think about establishing a production line for it, especially those of us in academia, if we're working with teams of people. Try and set up a production line of writing, whereby you... This is a production line for making bicycles, but you get the idea. You know, you won't write everything at once. So if you're writing articles, you know, and you're writing with a team of people, or even if you're writing by yourself, think about the different pieces that you're going to write and have articles at different stages of production. Some of them will be in drafts, they'll be at the beginning of the stage, some will be in the middle, some will be near the end. Don't just confine yourself necessarily to working on one piece of writing, because you get very tired doing it. Try and think of different things to write. If you feel you can't write on one piece that you're doing and you've got ideas for another piece, don't give yourself rules and regulations about it. Go and write something for the other piece, or write something for the, you know, write a different part of what you're writing at that particular time. Don't necessarily work from the beginning to the end. But think where everything is in that process. And if you start at the left-hand side and start writing and build the piece up, eventually you'll get to the production line at the end, and it'll come off, and you will get it published. Also, think of priorities when you're writing. Many people get very carried away with the writing. It completely swamps them, and they say they really don't know where they are with it. They don't know what to do next. They're writing several articles, perhaps, or they're writing a PhD thesis, and they're writing different chapters. What should they give their attention to? But you should definitely have priorities. And priorities don't happen by accident. They're not necessarily apparent. And I think it's a really good practice to have yourself a whiteboard in your office or somewhere at home, wherever you can, and try and actually have things written up there, different colours, different lists. It's very mundane, very simple idea, but it's a very good one if you're going to get into writing for publication in a very serious way. You should be able to visualise what you're doing and see where things are at different parts of that sort of process. Another thing, this is the only thing I could find on Google Images, it's not necessarily about writing for publication. Another thing that I find very affirming to do is, if I've got a list of things that I'm writing, once something's published, don't rub it off the board. Put a line through it and leave it there, because it shows you you've written it, and it's quite satisfying to see it there. Leave it there for a while, don't rub it off immediately, or you don't feel you've made any achievement. So do try to prioritise, and do try to keep a very systematic note of where you are with your writing. Too many people work in a sort of very chaotic way. If you don't have a whiteboard, I find the To-Do app on the iPhone or on the Samsung, if you can get it for Samsung, really good for organising this, because you can put things in priorities, you can put them in date, you can give yourself alerts to what you're going to do next. So what should you prioritise? If you're writing several things at once, what should you prioritise? You may be working on drafts of articles, you may have sent something off to a journal which has come back to you for revision, or you may have a new idea for something that you want to write. My feeling is that you should always prioritise drafts over new manuscripts. If you're working on a draft and you've got a new idea for a paper, you know, make a note of those ideas, but get working on the draft. The problem is, if you're halfway through something and you leave it and you go off to do something else, the chances are you're not going to come back to it, or you're going to forget what you were writing, or you may just give up altogether. So your first drafts don't have to be perfect, they just have to be written. Too many people try to write things and get them perfect the first time round. Don't worry about that. Just write whatever's in your head, get it down, get it onto, well, not onto paper, but onto a computer screen, and you can then do something with it. You can edit a bad piece of writing, but you can't edit no writing at all. So try and get things down as soon as you can, and push on when you've actually got a draft in process. Don't get distracted by new ideas. Specifically, try not to be distracted by other people with what they claim are good ideas for writing. Push on with the thing that you're doing. If you're in the situation of having submitted something to a journal and you have got revision to do, you should always prioritise revision over drafts or new writing. This is a common mistake that I see amongst my colleagues and amongst my PhD students when they're in the process of writing for publication. They get revisions to do and say, well, I'll leave that until later, I'll press on with what I'm doing. My view is that if you're given something to revise, that should be your priority there and then. Get it done and don't leave it. People often say, how long should it take you to revise a paper once you've been given revisions? I say, well, if they're minor revisions, do it before you've started work that day. If they're major revisions, do it by the time you've finished work at night. You know, really try and get these things done double quick, 24 hours if you possibly can. Sometimes it's not possible, but really as quickly as you can. That way it gets off the production line and you can get back to working on what you're working on at the time. If you're working on something and you've got, maybe it's just me, but if you're working on something and you've got revisions to do, they bug you. They sort of annoy you. You sort of start thinking about them. Get them done and get them out of the way and get things back to the journal, and that kind of clears your desk. And that's very much part of that production line idea that I was talking about. So always, always if you get things back looking like this, it won't look like that these days because it's usually tracked electronically. If you get things like that back with you, it can be very, very discouraging, I know. Don't react badly. Don't necessarily jump into it in panic. Put it aside for a few minutes, take a few deep breaths and go back to it and just systematically start doing all the things that have been suggested, because they're all there to try and improve the quality, and ultimately they will all help you to get published, which is the objective of the exercise. You've got to be quite focused and clear that you want to get published. I'm often asked by people when I'm doing writing for publication workshops, how do you select a journal? How do you decide where to publish? And that's a very difficult question to answer if I don't know what people are writing. I think it's a very obvious thing to say, where you publish depends on what you're writing. And I think you should always have a cluster of journals in mind, whichever subject you're working. This happens to be computer science and maths and statistics publications, but you should always have a cluster of journals in mind. In other words, if you don't get accepted by one journal, you should quickly think where it's going to go next. You should maybe have three or four in mind. If you're publishing in academic, generic nursing journals, for example, like mine, you should maybe have Journal of Advanced Nursing, International Journal of Nursing Studies, Journal of Clinical Nursing, and a few of those in mind, so that if you get rejected by one, you can quickly move on to the next one. So don't just think about one journal and it's all or nothing. Try and think about the next one along the way. You've also got to think about what you want to achieve. If you're an academic, you probably want to publish in highly prestigious impact factor journals with lots of citations. If you're a professional, that probably is about the worst thing you can do, because while these things bring credibility to academics, they don't necessarily get read. You might want to think of some professional journals that will actually be read. Or you may, as I say, think about just getting things out online eventually. So just think very strategically about where you want to put things. And if you've got any doubts about it, check the guidance for the journal, read a few examples of the journal, try and find out about as much about it as you possibly can. And could I just issue a warning? I don't have any slides on this, but I've noticed recently, it's an international phenomenon, but I've noticed in Saudi, I'm given a lot of people's curriculum vitae from various universities here and in other parts of the Middle East to look at, to assess them for promotions. And I've noticed a lot of people are publishing in what are called predatory journals. These are online, open access journals that offer to publish your work peer-reviewed, in inverted commas, within a week if you pay $500 or something like that. Well, peer review and getting published in a week are totally incompatible. It's impossible. Peer review takes several weeks to do. So I really urge you to be very careful where you publish and to take advice on this. Don't go for these open access, I'm not saying open access is wrong, but open access predatory journals. And it's very easy to check to see if journals are predatory. There's a list of them called Beale's List of Predatory Publications. There's also a list called the Directory of Open Access Journals, which is the bona fide journals, like the one I publish. So you can check online, so there's no excuse for doing this. But those of us in academia, and I'm sure the senior clinicians present, are bombarded daily by emails inviting us to publish in some new journal, usually with a highfalutin title, the International Journal of Natural Sciences and Nursing, or something like that. The clue's in the name. It'll claim to be highly prestigious, to have an impact factor of 10 or something like that. Well, that's a giveaway too. There's no nursing journals of high impact factors like that. These are basically fraudulent, so just be very, very careful. But I'm seeing people time and again publishing in these journals, and they are absolutely worthless. Anyway, end of that particular sermon. Now, this happens to be my journal landing page. All I'm wanting to this is not an advert for my journal, but what I want to show you here is, you probably can't see it from the back, I can barely see it from here, but every journal landing page has got a section called guidelines, or author guidelines, or guidance for authors. It goes under different names and descriptions. If you're going to have any approach to publication, strategic or not, you have to read the author guidelines. And I can absolutely guarantee you that the vast majority of the papers that, as editor-in-chief, I throw out at the first glance, the first third of the papers that come through my journal, are rejected because they don't follow the journal guidelines. It's the easiest thing to do. If you follow the journal guidelines, you are very far on the way to getting your paper into the next two-thirds, which may possibly be accepted. So do read the guidelines. It seems a very simple thing to do, doesn't it? But every day I find papers that say that don't. And the easiest thing to do is to get the abstract in the right format, because that's what the editor-in-chief looks at. I get 1,500 papers a year, roughly. I can't read every one of them in detail. If the abstract's correct, and the title's interesting, and everything else is okay, and the English is good, then I'm quite likely to put it forward, whether the science is brilliant or not, because I don't have time to read it, okay? If you don't get the abstract right, it's just going to be thrown out. And exactly the same for professional articles or invitations to put things up on blogs. There will be guidelines for how to do this, so read them. I said already about learning to write anywhere and everywhere. Try not to be necessarily in the right place at the right time. I've kind of preempted this point a little bit, but you've really got to, by all means, write in your office. But again, if you're going to be strategic about it, how many people spend any time in their office these days? I certainly don't. I'm mostly mostly out of the country or in Saudi Arabia these days. So I'm rarely in my office, but I'm often in other people's offices or in hotels. So you can write in the office. A radical thought for many people is that they can actually write at home. I know that it's a bit difficult sometimes if you've got children or demanding husbands or demanding wives, but you've just got to, a few minutes before you go to bed, a few minutes when you get up in the morning. Try and find little quality times to write. Again, it's about strategy. How are you going to win? How are you going to get through this process? You're not going to get through it unless you keep plugging away at the writing. Trains, you don't have any in Saudi Arabia yet. We've got lots of them in the UK. Trains are a great place to write. Aeroplanes, fantastic place to write, even if you're in economy. Hotels, wonderful. Nobody disturbs you in a hotel. The phone never rings. You can turn your mobile off. You can get peace to write. So try and learn to write in different places and don't confine yourself to where you're comfortable or where you feel happy, because you're never completely comfortable and none of us are ever completely happy. These are a few random things about strategy. The next thing is to be aware, if you're writing, especially for academic journals, but even for professional journals, is that there are international standards for presenting different kinds of work. And most of these can be, or nearly all of them, all the ones that have been approved, are found on the Equator Network page. So if you go to the Equator Network page, you'll find standards for writing, randomized controlled trials, systematic reviews, qualitative studies, diagnostic studies, and you can click on these and it takes you to different sets of guidance. And these are constantly updated, so it's well worth keeping an eye on it. So if you did nothing else today, those of you who are interested in publishing, especially academic papers, if you go and take a look at the Equator Network page, you'll have done a great deal of good. You'll have learned something. The other aspect of publication, which is very important and is increasingly becoming a problem, are the ethical aspects of publication. Again, an exceedingly strategic aspect of publication is not to commit breaches of publication ethics. Don't just copy other people's work. That's called plagiarism. It's also fraud. Don't make up results. You'll get found out eventually. Don't exaggerate your results. You know, don't falsify them. Don't say things that are not there. Don't miss people off the list of authors if they've actually made a contribution. Don't be talked into adding people to the list of authors if they haven't made a contribution. All these things are breaches of publication ethics. Some of them are more serious than others, but plagiarism can end your career, especially if you're an academic. It can also end your career if you, I'm just mean stealing other people's work. It can also end your working career if you're a nurse, because it's considered to be a breach of ethics. And there are nurses in the UK who've been caught plagiarising in publications. They're not academics, but they've been reported to a regulatory body, and they have been, at least one I know of, has been struck off. So be very careful breaching publication ethics. There's no excuse for it. It's basically fraudulent. And we will find out if you try to copy other people's work. We've got software that will do this, and you will be in trouble. So another thing that would be really good for those of you thinking about writing for publication, or those of you who are involved in it who've never done this before, have a look at the Committee on Publication Ethics webpage. There you'll find codes of practice for authors, for editors, for reviewers, and for publishers. And you'll also find algorithms which tell you what we will do to you if we catch you doing anything that's wrong, because there's a system for which all editors across the world, all good editors, sign up to. So excellent, not only an excellent web page out of interest, it's also an excellent resource to help you to write ethically. Nothing else. Oh, there we go. Now, I think one of the key parts of any strategy for writing is seeking criticism. Find yourself a critical friend. If you write by yourself, if you're writing in a team of people, you've naturally got critics built in. When we start off, we tend to write by ourselves, and we tend to be very nervous about showing our writing to other people. In fact, when you write something, it can almost be embarrassing to read it back to yourself. You've got to overcome that embarrassment and sort out what you see is wrong. You've also got to overcome the embarrassment and be willing to give it to somebody else to read, because they will help you to get it into the right format. Because when you're going to send it off to a journal, an editor's going to look at it, reviewers are going to look at it, you may as well get as many comments as you can right at the beginning. So seek some criticism of your writing. Don't find the sort of person who always does this. We all know that sort of person who criticises everything. They're no use, because your writing isn't completely bad. But don't find this sort of person who always says your writing's good, because your writing isn't all good. It's somewhere in between. It can always be corrected. It's not perfect. It will never be perfect. You'll have to send it off even when it's not perfect. You've got to appreciate that. So sorry for this very sexist picture here of a man helping the woman up the hill, but what you've got to find is somebody who's been there before, another editor, another academic or whatever, who's willing to read your work and engage with it and actually say, that's wrong, that needs to be moved, that needs to be corrected, the English is not right there, the arguments are weak there, I suggest this. The sort of person who just says, that's all great or that's not very good, is not very helpful. And this can be the most difficult thing for people to overcome, I know that. But you've got to do it. If you don't do it, the editor or the reviewers will reject your writing, and then you won't be very happy. And you've also got to learn when to let it go. You've also got to say, well, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. It's got to go now. When you let it go, it will come back. It'll never be accepted first time. Even if it's not rejected, it will come back, and you'll have to deal with reviewers' comments. So my final few points are dealing with reviewers' comments. And those of us who are academics always have to deal with reviewers' comments. You get used to it. You've got to toughen yourself up and get a tough skin. So Williams's golden rules. I'm going to give my email at the end of this on the slide. If anybody wants to get a hold of anything that I've said, or the slides, or this paper, the slides are on my SlideShare on Google, on LinkedIn, and I can send you the papers I've referred to. But Williams's golden rules are answer completely, answer politely, and answer with evidence. So answering completely means if you get a list of corrections to do or revisions to do, you should do them all. And deal with every single point that's made, even if you can't change it. Don't ignore points. That annoys reviewers and it annoys editors. So do say, you know, this point is something we can't actually address, but you've got to back that up. Make a list of the points, even if you're not given a list, if you're given a blocked paragraph. Make a list. Show the editor and the reviewer that you've taken the time to read them all. Make a table up. Page, point, response, and whatever. Do it in red font so that it attracts the attention of the person who's then looking at the paper, and then they might ignore the rest and not start reviewing it again. Try and draw their attention to what you've done. I've always managed to get papers accepted when I've had revisions to do and done them properly. Answer politely. Don't start with "we completely disagree with the comments of the reviewer" or "who on earth are you reviewers" or worse. We've seen it all as editors. It's not polite. It gets you nowhere. And we also ask our reviewers to be polite in turn. If they're not polite or they're scathing about people's work, we always speak to them about it. And if they persist, we drop them as reviewers. This is not about personalities. It's about the work that's being done and helping to get it better. And finally, answer with evidence. If you disagree with a point by the reviewer, provide the evidence. Reviewers are sometimes wrong. You don't want to tell them they're wrong. You want to sort of politely tell them that, well, we disagree because we've seen this here and these are the facts that are backing us up. And usually that's okay. Okay, finally, about the most strategic thing you could do for writing for publication is to buy this book, which is edited by myself and a colleague. I've got a large family, and I've got 6 grandchildren, and at Christmas time they need to have presents. So if you buy this book, then they will have presents at Christmas and food on the table. So it's available. It's edited, it's multi-authored, it's not just written by myself, there are all sorts of people here writing about the publication process, about ethics, about blogging, about how to write, how to keep going, how to get publications out of PhDs and master's thesis, and it's a very popular book, and I don't think it's been translated into Russian, if there are any Russians present, but it's not been translated into many languages, but I know people find it very useful. Anyway, that's a blatant piece of advertising. I won't do that again. Finally, that's my email address. If you want to contact me afterwards, you can ask me questions, you can send me abuse if you want, I'll send it back to you. If you're really bored, you can follow me on Twitter, and if you want to check up on my publications and research record, that's my ORCID number there, you'll find it on the ORCID page. Thanks very much for the opportunity to address you this morning. I'm speaking again briefly in the afternoon. I look forward to that, and once again, thank you very much.